You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. Talk about this week's comics, and in this week's spotlight, James talks about Asterix and the big fight. Around Mike tonight are.
Hello, I'm James.
No, I'm Nick. Sorry, I assumed everyone would understand that.
Hello, I'm James.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, James.
Hi, James.
Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, and welcome to you too, listener. Welcome into our little pod.
Just to clarify, listener, we aren't actually you too. James is just confusing that as by saying that. Yeah. I think he meant welcome to you as well.
I'm really tired and headachy today.
Well, this should be helping then.
Yeah, so this I'm going to be full of energy.
What have you guys been up to?
Jane. Yes, what?
What have you guys been up to, Jane?
Well, this week, James and I and our wife and life partner and a child went to Kids Today.
That's my daughter Scarlett. She's very lively.
She's all right.
We went to an indoor play area because it was raining, called Kids Today, and
well, now people can find it and stalk us.
Was it all made of sponges?
How many Kids Todays do you think there are?
I think there's just that one. I don't think it's a chain. It's just that one in Chelmsford in Hampshire.
I'll bleep all this out. It's fine. I don't have a bleeper sound effect. I'm not really
going to
do that. No, it's fine.
Scarlett's had a lot of fun, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
It was also quite fun. The play areas are quite fun. There's two, and one of them's for, is it three and under?
Three and unders.
And the other one's for over threes. Three and unders. I'm quite tall, so I had to...
For a three-year-old?
Yeah. Mm. So it's not quite built for people of my height, yeah. And the slides are a bit...
Even I can get down the slide in a three-year-old.
Yeah, bit. I got down it, but it was still a bit, oh, this is a bit, you know, not meant for me. I liked the over threes because there was lots of room on the slide on that one.
You went very high with her as well, right up to the top.
Is that the highest she's ever been?
No, she's been in a building.
She's on my class A's.
Is in that play area?
No, she's been up there before. But let's say yes.
Oh.
I had fun. I was chilling out with life partner Steve. It was nice.
And there was an amusing Tannoy announcement, which I didn't hear, so we'll let James mention that.
How did it sound, James? Do an impersonation.
Right, telephone call for Peter File, telephone call, please.
Seriously.
That's twice.
That's a hoax, yeah.
They
surely
announced it twice.
Obviously, yes, there was no one called Peter File that was prepared to answer the telephone. Or... there was a man with slick down hair and an anorak on in the corner that looked a bit shifty when they got there.
Just the one.
But I like, me and Steve were sat there and looking and clocking the individuals that had got it. They're going, oh, they're laughing, they got it, they're laughing.
Were you not checking out young mums?
No, I try not to do that if I can get away with it.
I try to do it if I can get away with it.
Yeah, not in places like that. Of all the places in the world that you don't want to be, like, labelled a pervert, kiddies' play area is probably quite high up the
but
list.
But if you're showing attention to the mums, isn't that better? It proves that you are interested in...
Well, it depends.
And a child must be much easier to train to, like, go up to strange, attractive women and talk to them than a dog is. Frankly, dogs are not that easy to train to do that.
I was with my wife that I love very much. Why would I need to pay any attention to these other women apart from in a very sort of asexual manner?
To invite a third into the bedroom.
Ah, like the Jefferson Airplane song Triad.
Yes. I don't know.
Actually, no, that, wasn't it Birds originally, and they covered it? It's very funny. Some of the Notorious Birds, brother, it's so cute. The hippies were such sexist bastards, weren't they?
They were.
I don't see why we can be three. That's very nice. Sing a nice song about you want to have two chicks in a bed with you, you dirty fucking bearded tosser.
I was listening to Wide World by Cat Stevens, which I'd always thought of as quite a nice song, but it is basically him trying to make her feel insecure about leaving him.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I understand that maybe the reason you want to leave me isn't because you don't like me anymore. Maybe it's because you want to see the rest of the world. But you're not going to find it as easy without me there, darling. No. Oh, no. So I hope you find someone nice to look
but
after
you. Always get by.
Almost as nice as mine. That'll be okay.
She always, get by with a smile, though, yeah?
You might just get by with a smile, though. Something
and,
like
and
that.
And he hopes she's got a lot of nice clothes to wear.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Is Scarlett walking yet, then?
Yeah.
Is she talking yet?
Yeah.
Is she doing maths?
Yes, she can count.
Can she fly an aeroplane yet?
Yes.
She's at that age?
She's got, is it the stage one pilot license?
Fucking hell, yeah. She's advanced.
Yeah, she is pretty much
it feels like I haven't seen her in ages.
Yeah, she's got, she's just passed her neurosurgery exams as well. She's been experimenting on my brain, which is why I'm a little bit slow today.
You're not allowed to make Doogie Howser jokes around her, though, because she finds that condescending.
She does find it condescending. Just all I've got to do is open my mouth and she finds it condescending.
Oh, man.
She did manage to lie down on Shirley High Street on Tuesday, which we call the Mutant Mile.
The Mutant Mile. I think I know why, actually. Yeah. I used to live
she's
down there.
She's been a very naughty girl.
So she's doing tantrums, she's having tantrums now, she's learned how to do those. Yeah. How did she learn to do those from your house, though? Your wife's not tantruming.
No, Nicola doesn't tantrum at all. I don't know where she would have picked that up from. I have no idea.
Oh. What else did you guys do? I say you guys because you're practically inseparable when you're not here, even though you're not married.
We had a nice dinner last night, didn't we, and watched the opening Olympics. Paralympics. What else did you do, though? We watched Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
So what did you think, James? You hadn't seen it before.
Yeah,
is that
it was
right,
kid silly
James?
Fun. I liked it. It was nice.
Did you like the way the aliens talked?
Yeah, it's funny.
It's funny. I like it.
The humans were so stupid. I found the Pierce Brosnan and Sex in the City Carry storyline really,
Sarah Jessica Parker,
really unsettling, and I felt really sad for them at the end because they were so scared and alone at the end. And they weren't even able to reach out to each other to embrace. You know, like the simplest of sort of human contact and embrace. And because he was just a head and she was just a head. And they luckily rolled together to kiss, but you know that would have been very fleeting. They'd have rolled apart again. It's just so, such a terrifying and lonely death they must have both faced.
Do you know that film came out roughly the same time as Independence Day?
Uh-huh.
And audiences hated that.
I liked it way more than Independence Day.
Because I don't think they realised quite... I don't think a lot of people who went to see it realised that it was a joke.
Yeah, oh, well.
I think they thought it was quite silly. And it's like, well, yes. Yes, yeah. It's quite silly.
Yeah.
Obviously,
it's very silly.
Dicks.
And then I showed Jane and life partner Steve Paul.
And it was good.
Which I enjoyed much more the second time. I enjoyed it just fine the first time around. Benefits from a second viewing. A night after that, I watched Fritz the Cat.
Which you've been confusing us with
Felix the Cat, which could be dangerous.
Did you end up watching that with him last night,
Jane? No, we watched the open ceremony.
Isn't it pornographic?
No.
It was when he started talking about cat orgies, and I innocently thought, I don't remember there being cat orgies in Felix the Cat.
The comic's got
It's rude. There is sex in it. It's rude. I wouldn't call it pornographic necessarily.
Is there, do you see people putting things in things?
No. You don't see penetration.
Do you see erect penises?
You see a lot of penises.
Are they erect?
Is this a cartoon? I don't think any of them are erect.
Then it isn't quite like the comic and therefore is...
No, it's toned down a bit.
Pornographic.
But of course, Fritz the Cat, the first one's the Ralph... Because I've got the set with the Nine Lives of Fritz the Cat, which I haven't watched yet. But Ralph Bashke...
Oh, yeah, he was good.
...directed the first one.
He did the first Lord of the Rings movie.
That's right. But if it's one of those... It's got some stuff to say. There's a lot of hokey... sort of post-hippie bullshit in there, but I really fucking enjoyed it. Really good. And the animation's lovely. Really nice.
He was good. Lots of probably rotoscope stuff.
Yeah, for shizzle.
Was that your weeks? Anything else happen?
I started playing Bioshock 2.
Well, what's that like?
Yeah, good.
Is it as good as Bioshock 1?
Yeah, so far so good, actually. It's just creepy.
Is that on the Xbox?
Yeah.
I need to do some more Haloing. I haven't done any Haloing in about a week.
Sorry, my
arm's... That sound is James's arm keeps sticking to his comics. When did Marvel comics start being so frictiony?
I don't know, I don't normally wear them. Yeah. I'm in Mufti, I'm not in my work clothes.
Hmm.
I don't normally have so much bare arm. I'm naked. How was your week?
Was away at the weekend with my lovely wife. We went to...
a wedding.
A wedding. Yeah, I'm just trying to remember where exactly it was. It wasn't London, I think. It was in, like, Kent or Surrey somewhere. I don't know. We stayed in a Holiday, a Premier Inn. They're, like, very average. It was a very hot hotel room. But we did get to spend nearly the whole weekend with our nephews, which was lovely. Trying to help them walk, doing lots of... One of them can walk fine, the other one still gets around quicker on all fours. So he prefers that. He's lazy. So we had lots of fun with them. And then we went to a wedding and drank too much. And it was my cousin's wedding, one of my younger cousin's weddings. And the thing about weddings, especially when they're for younger people or... Well, actually, no, just probably for weddings. There was lots of Greeky music and lots of Greeky tradition. But there was also, I got to hear lots of songs and kind of dance to them that I only vaguely knew from people doing parodies of them on the internet. So I finally got to hear Call Me Maybe the whole way through and dance to that. And if you love it, then you should have put a ring on it. If you love it, then you should have put... I have never heard that song properly before.
Uh-oh.
Oh. No, they didn't play... what's that from? That's an 80s song.
I don't know.
I can't remember what it is.
No, I don't know.
Janet Jackson or something.
Oh. I don't know now.
I can't remember. So, anyway, that was good. There was dancing. I didn't do that much dancing. I did do a lot of drinking, though. But as I've said before, the thing about mixing drinks is it's better if you really go for it. Is the thing I've discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So there was whiskey. I had some of that. I don't normally drink whiskey. I'm starting to like whiskey, and I never used to.
Okay.
I've always been a brandy man. But now I'm kind of a whiskey man. Call me Jack. Is that right? Is that a whiskey?
That's a bourbon.
Well,
bourbon.
I don't fucking know.
A bourbon is a biscuit.
I'm still a little bit hungover, I think. And then wine. Wine's good. You have to have wine for the toasts, really.
So you had a whiskey drink.
I had a wine drink. And then I had a Jägermeister drink. I don't care if you're supposed to call it Jägermeister. I prefer Jäger. It sounds better. Jäger sounds good. Jäger sounds like more American, which is a bit weird.
No,
I like Jäger. It makes me feel like it's a traditional old-fashioned drink.
Interestingly enough,
cough mixture.
When doing chest compressions for someone who's choking, you do essentially a J motion. Beneath their chest.
Not a yay motion.
No, not a yay motion. It's definitely a J motion.
How do you know that, James?
I'm now the official first aider for the Momcast. I've got a certificate.
So if one of us falls over, you will be the one administering face-to-face?
First aid.
Mouth-to-mouth?
Yeah.
Or face-to-face?
Only if you're unconscious and you've stopped breathing.
Is face-to-face a first aid technique?
It is, yeah.
Okay, good. I was just checking. So it's been a bit of a week. I had a nice lunch with Steve today. That was good. I had a very fun moment.
Life
where I was running a tiny little bit late. So and he said I'm at the Starbucks, and I texted him back saying Stephen just coming. When
very
I was
good.
Just coming. Which,
calling back to that.
Calling back to Adam and Joe, who are my favourites.
Well, Bugs just finished, hasn't it, the series?
I haven't been watching it. I need
Sky
to watch
Atlantic.
It.
Very good. I also watched, I forgot this, With Great Power, the Stan Lee documentary that was on Sky Arts 1 the other night, which was very good. It was nothing in there. It's some interesting stuff about the bullpen, an early Marvel. his reminiscences were very enjoyable of Kirby and Ditko, especially as I watched it on Kirby's birthday as well. What was most charming was the stuff at home with the Lees, him and his wife, very amusing couple.
And his son Jim Lee?
No, Jim Lee wasn't there. Jim Lee was interviewed though, funnily enough. Doesn't look like his son, but hey. But no, his wife's a very... I didn't know his wife was an English lady.
Is she?
She's an English lady. My goodness, she's got a very strong character.
Has she? Oh, yeah. Well, but he has as well, so he she'd has. Have to
They
have.
Were really charming together. It was a lovely... if you get to see it, it's great. With Great Power, it's called. Really
Did
charming.
You see... I read an interview yesterday with the two... With Tobey Maguire and... Who's the Spider-Man? Who's the Peter Parker in this most recent one?
Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield, who I really like. And it was a really nice interview, and it made me kind of... Although there were lots of things I didn't like about that film, it just made me remember all the nice things about them. Most of his stuff I thought was great.
Good.
So I'm quite looking forward to hopefully there being another one.
I'm sure there will.
And did you see the picture that surfaced in the last couple of weeks of Stanley on a sofa naked with just a magazine covering him?
No.
That's funny. I'll see if I can find a link to it.
I'd like to see that.
And tumble it.
And was it something he knew he was posing for and it wasn't like...
Yeah, they hadn't just waited until he was asleepy. He visited...
Someone creaked into Stanley's room while he was asleep, put a magazine over his junk and took a picture.
No, he looks pretty... Apparently, it was... He went on it. It was a late 70s or early 80s visit to Marvel, and they were all falling around like taking photos of each other for one of the Fumetti covers, I think, and he got the photo they asked him if he wanted to take a photo, and I don't know if it was his idea to be naked on the couch or whatever, but they took the photo, and then after he'd gone, one of his assistant, like his personal assistant or something, contacted them and said, please don't print that. He just didn't know what was, you know, he was just completely in a crazy mood, and please don't print it.
He seems like such a fun chap.
He does. Oh. Fun guy to be with, like a mushroom.
Seasonal. Apt.
It's very wet.
Yeah.
My tomatoes have blight.
Yeah.
And that's not a euphemism, Jane. I know what you're thinking with that dirty mind of yours, but my tomatoes in the garden literally do have blight.
In your garden?
Yes. And my outside, not my lady garden, because I'm a man, I don't have a lady garden.
Not in your Martika's kitchen.
Not in my countryside.
No.
Should we talk about comics?
Okay.
Shall we first tell people how they can get a hold of us?
Okay.
Because we do talk about comics.
Okay.
That's what we do. We are a comic book podcast.
Hi, thanks for downloading.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening to us on your thing.
You're great. Just like Tony the Tiger. Yes.
Oh, no!
What?
Now I've got that stupid song from the Kellogg's advert.
Even after I did a little bit of Put a Ring on It.
Yeah.
Or the other one.
But I still don't mind that song being in my head.
Just call me maybe.
Just think about a Nicki Minaj song and you'll be fine.
What?
Yes, so we're a comic book podcast when we're not talking about music. Although we are very insightful when we talk about music. You can... find out a little bit more about us at this website, which is momcomics.com. You can email us at
momcast@gmail.com.
That's exactly correct. Mm. You can talk to us on Twitter at...
Hi, I'm James Momb.
I'm Jane Momb.
And I'm Nick Sight.
Yeah.
That's Jane Momb.
Momb.
She's nobody's mom.
Momb.
And I think, and you can, and we're on Facebook, and we're on Google Plus and Tumblr. You can see links to that at the top right of momcomics.com. We do like you to email us with questions and comments, and also we would like to have audio contributions of between two to five minutes long. Anything about comics you fancy talking about, we will, if you're not completely rubbish, you know, if you're at least to the standard that we are at, we'll put you on
good
the
luck,
show.
Good luck reaching those
so
heights.
Just have dead air reaching, for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Good luck reaching the giddy heights of a Momcast quality contribution.
Do you know Radio 5 Live did a show on Bank Holiday Monday? 4 hours long about the best of podcasting. Couldn't even spare a second for us.
Why not? Did we know they were doing that?
No, it's, I think because we're...
Did our people talk to their people?
No, our people did not talk to their people. But well done if you found us. We're a niche, and it's good to be in a niche.
Who are our people?
Our people.
I'll put you on to our people after this.
Don't
How do I not know who...
We'll get our people to talk to your people, Nick.
But, okay. Have you guys got agents?
We have people.
I mean agents, not Asians.
We have people.
I've got Asians of Ajax.
I don't know what's going on
we
anymore.
We should talk about...
Let's talk about this
comics.
Week's comics. James, you're first.
Hi. Only two from me this week, you'll be pleased to hear, listener. But I am spotlighting, so you might want to skip on the next week. First up is Avenging Spider-Man, issue 11. It's part of the 50 Years of Spider-Man series. Of there's lots of
things
stuff,
that happen.
Lots of stuff going on with that. By Zeb Wells, Steve Dillon and Frank Martin. They're the cover guys. Nice cover by Chris Samnee of Peter Parker.
It's a beautiful cover.
It is. Peter Parker and Aunt May, about whom this issue is solely about. Sorry, the cover's Chris Samnee and Javier Rodriguez.
Mm. Avenging Spider-Man is the Spider-Man team-up book, isn't it?
It is. However, the team-up book, the team-up this week is Peter Parker and his regret, featuring Aunt May.
So she's not. He's not teaming up with her. They don't have a misunderstanding and a fight. And then, and then they end up realising they're on the same side.
That's correct. Well, the scene is set with him having a confrontation with a very, very C-list copperhead, and the people he saved note that he's really not himself.
Because Spider-Man isn't.
That's right.
And they've obviously been saved by him a few times.
That's true enough, and that's because it's the anniversary of Uncle Ben's death. And most of the book itself takes place. It's basically a conversation between him and Aunt May at Ben's graveside, and then flashes back through parts of Spider-Man's career with Aunt May. Basically, he keeps obviously saying to Aunt May, "But it's my fault. I feel awful." And she said, "Nonsense, Peter. It's not your fault." It's a lovely character piece between the two of them.
Do they fluff over how many anniversaries it is?
Yeah, that's never actually mentioned.
Uh-huh.
But it's lovely. Aunt May as a character is given a lot of life in this particular book, more so than I've seen. I haven't been reading Spider-Man in any great detail for very long recently, but she's given an awful lot of life in this. It's lovely. And really, she's the star of the show rather than him. But it's also a nice sort of little synopsis of what has made Spider-Man... The great man, or Peter Parker, the great man, is Spider-Man. Here's another book stuck to my arm.
I think we're going to get a lot of that this month.
Yeah. It's a really lovely, done-in-one book. Can be read in complete isolation. I really enjoyed it. It's lovely, quite poignant, quite, because of the subject matter, quite morbid at times.
You know what made me sad? The thing I'm focusing on, I'm fixating on about that comic, is... The Uncle Ben is buried at a place with extra, like, a family space.
Yeah.
With, like, where you'd intend for your partner to eventually join you. But Aunt May's married someone else, so I don't know who she's going to end up with in heaven.
Do you know what really creeped me out, actually? The one thing, it's silly the things you pick up, but they're at the mausoleum, the stone, the family grave.
Yes.
For the Parkers. And look, next to Ben Parker, there's a blank commemorative book ready for the next person.
It says
RIP,
exactly. And the intention, obviously, is that the family will be there together. I don't know who the other two people are. But
probably Peter now, isn't it? Because Aunt May's probably swanning off with her fancy man.
Yeah, so who does she end up like? If Uncle Ben was the love of her life, who does she end up with if she dies?
There's some really nice stuff about that in the book. Which I won't go into any great detail because it's some lovely, lovely character.
So I'll
no
read
super
it.
Heroics, but tons of character.
I'll read it now while you talk about your next book.
The next book I'm going to talk about is about some star-crossed lovers. It's issue 21 of Hickman and Draghiotta's FF, Future Foundation for the Uninitiated, and features on the tentative peace between the Kree and the Inhumans. And Black Bolt has made a deal of sorts with Supremor, of the Kree, like the super mega brain of the Kree.
Oh, is he like a big brain?
He is, isn't he? Essentially,
not a big head.
But he's a big head, but isn't he? He's a combined intelligence of the Kree, isn't he? I know his origin, but it escapes me right now. So the book itself hinges around this tentative peace between the two of them. But the peace, it seems, has been brokered on Crystal returning home to the Inhumans. She, of course, being the lover of Ronan, the hammer dude from the Kree.
Oh, I don't think I knew that was going on.
So this book's very much about that. There's a lot of stuff with Black Bolt travels inside the consciousness of Supremor to battle, and we see how they came to broker the peace. It is Fantastic Four, Inhumans, Kree. So it's huge, massive, cosmic shit with this really sort of lovely love story playing as an undercurrent beneath it of the Fantastic Four. Only features Reed and Sue, and it's lovely, and I don't know what I'm going to do when Hickman isn't writing FF.
You'll read another book
and Fantastic Four,
and maybe you'll be reading Fantastic Four
because I love him in this sandpit so much, because the stuff, the ideas in the Fantastic Four are so big and so huge, and I love what he does with them. I connect with these books so much, and I do feel really
You're
sad.
You're making me quite sad.
Yeah, I feel really sad that he's not going to be on it much longer. I don't know, I can't go on. No,
why
does
Marvel
brilliant.
Do this to us?
I keep saying this, and if only one person that listens to this goes and picks up in trade Hickman's run on Fantastic Four and FF, then, like, podcasting will be worth it, because I think it's so good, and I genuinely, and I've said it before, but I genuinely feel like I've been privileged enough to be following and picking up what I think will be seen as a classic series in years to come. I just think it's awesome what he's done with that family. That's all.
God bless you.
Yeah, I was being sincere then.
You were.
I'll carry on fucking about for the rest of the podcast.
Jane!
Nick!
What did you get this week?
This week
I knew how to do it this time.
I picked up issue 9 of 9 from Vertigo at $2.99. Written... What?
It's building up a bit.
She is.
Written by Brian Azzarello and art by Risso.
Eduardo Risso.
Is it 100 bullets?
Risso. Risso. Eduardo Risso. It's Spaceman.
It's about, James, in case you don't know what Spaceman's about, mm-hmm. It's about the, it's basically a biography of that guy who did that song that was on that advert. Spaceman. I only what he had like orange
Babylon
skin.
Zoo.
Babylon Zoo. It's all about him.
Yeah, he's just this guy.
Yeah, he's just this guy.
I prefer the Happy Hardcore remix of that song, but there you go.
That is not what it's about, is it, Jane?
No, it's not.
I've read 9 issues of it, and I've got really. I'm obviously still confused about what it's actually
I'm
about.
I'm glad you said that. I am still confused too. It's based in a very hyped up, not too distant future, and not something that we're probably a million miles away from either, where media frenzy, reality TV, the Earth's in, you know, has...
It's in a right bloody state.
It is. It's,
hell in a handcart.
We've over-farmed ourselves, and with global warming, it's basically all come to a bit of a head. And Spaceman... Because there are space men. They were, I think they're monkeys that were genetically engineered.
They look like giant apes.
Yeah,
they?
Giant apes that genetically modified or crossbred with humans to go into space to do certain tasks. But once they've done that task, they had no need for anyone. They had no purpose. So they were sort of dumped into society. And we do follow one, the story, this whole story's been following one in particular called Orson, who is very kind-hearted by nature and gets caught up in a reality TV scheme for ratings involving a kidnapping of a girl, a little girl, by accident he's trying to save her and rescue her, and the conclusion left me just as confused. It seems like there's no happy ending, there's no sad ending, there's an ending.
There's some interesting reveals as well, yeah, as to what happened, because the whole thing has a flashback.
That's right, yeah. I didn't want to... There are flashbacks throughout the story, so that had a satisfying conclusion. But the actual story of Orson protecting... trying to rescue Tara and the fights and everyone who's after Tara for money. It's all about money, and there's a reality TV crew following her around, and no one will intervene because it's journalism...
It's reality because they're cowards, reality, basically. Yeah.
Well, it's taking the extreme of when you're doing sort of wildlife films that you don't intervene because it's you know, you're there to observe, you're not there to interfere with the chain,
like
the food chain.
Yes.
They don't, even though there's not just a little girl's life at stake, but several people's lives at stake, they still won't intervene because they are cowards. And that's when people that we perceived as being cowards step up to the mark and actually do something that's right for once. So, still confusing. I think as a trade will make a lot of sense reading each story.
I want to reread the whole thing.
The one thing we've spoken about all along is the language. Dialing into this hybrid text mess, you know, social media shorthand that we've developed. Once you've dialed into it, you kind of go with the flow. I think reading it one after another will make a really satisfying read and will make more sense. So I'm going to go back and read them all at once and see if that makes any sense. But really well written. I loved what Brian Azzarello was doing and the subtle messages that he was probably pushing.
Sometimes subtle, sometimes not so subtle.
Yeah. Like the reality that if you stop and think and go, actually, we are kind of heading that way. Was really, really liked that. That was really good.
The art's amazing as well.
Yeah, sorry, the artwork is amazing. It's very good. Yes, that's gone now.
I want to know.
Have to find a spaceman shaped hole.
A spaceman shaped hole. That sounds weird.
Isn't that funny? Because that spaceman ended this week, and of course Neil Armstrong passed away as well.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Very sad.
That's a coincidence, and a sad coincidence. I wonder...
I think it's proof of a higher intelligence in the universe.
Higher intelligence agency. HIA.
Absolutely.
I wonder... There'll probably be a trade solicitor of that really soon, actually. And I kind of want it in trade, so...
Yeah.
I will see if it reads as one book quite well. Oh, thank you, James. James just touched my boobie.
Okay. Thank you, chaps. The next book I'm going to talk about is... issue 30 at $2.99, also from Vertigo, written by Scott Snyder and art by Raphael Albuquerque.
Hot dog!
It's American Vampire. It's part 3 of a 6-part story called The Blacklist, which sees Pearl and Skinner Street Skinner Sweet.
Blimey, how many issues is it going to be before you get that right?
I usually get it right.
No,
I
you
think
do
I'm
usually get it right.
Working for the VMS, Pearl's husband Henry they were involved in an attack, and he's at near death, and he's, there's a lot of what?
Sorry. I was going to ask you a question that you can't possibly answer on the podcast.
No, I can't.
Without spoiling the book. So I'm not going to do it.
He's at death's door. Pearl's still fighting through to find... to basically eliminate anybody who's causing any threat to her and Henry, because all she's ever wanted is to, you know, settle down, have a life with Henry. Obviously, Pearl is a vampire and she has aged. She hasn't aged through the times. And as this book's been going through different areas, you've seen Henry age. And there are some things that she's having to cope with when it comes to his actual human mortality.
Incontinence.
Have you got Tourette's or something, James?
That might be something she has to cope with. Forgetfulness.
James has been promoted to the level of his own incontinence.
If you're not already reading this book, unfortunately, this is not a good issue to jump on, but it is a very good issue. You should definitely collect it in trade when it comes out. The artwork is amazing. And
who's that by again?
Raphael Albuquerque.
Hot dog!
What the hell was that?
It's just me saying hot dog. Okay.
The artwork's amazing. The story is great. And boy, this was an issue. You would have heard a lot of it. You would probably would have heard a lot about it via social media. And possibly some comics journalists would have picked it up. But yeah, very good issue.
Awesome. Thanks, Jane. You
so,
love America.
So is that how I thought film. It was doing the thing that they were doing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wow. That is a big one then.
2000 AD, I really, really like this week. I was a little bit indifferent to it last week. I'm still really enjoying Aquila. Aquila. Brilliant. You can pronounce it any number of different ways.
I'd like to say Aquila.
Maybe someone could send us a contribution of them saying it properly, because I'm not sure. Aquila.
Disappointing paucity of nudity this week.
Not as much nudity as in English. What James is saying is there wasn't as much nudity as he was hoping for. It was very violent, though.
He
like
does
that.
Draw a nice naked form, though, doesn't he?
Okay.
I particularly like his bums.
Gordon Rennie writing, Lee Gallagher drawing. I'm not going through it in sequence this week, so that's good. Ichabod Azrael is good. Really enjoying that. You haven't read this
yet, have
you?
I didn't find it as weird as you said it was last week. I don't think you've been following the story properly.
Ichabod Azrael?
Yeah.
Maybe I haven't.
Made perfect sense to me.
I don't really know what's going on in it, but it's awesome. I really, really like the art in it. I like the writing in Ichabod Azrael, but the art by It hasn't all been by Antonio Fuso, has it?
It doesn't look any different to me, so I think it must have been.
It's beautiful, though. I like it. Lots of tentacly monsters. People on the internet love tentacly monsters. I don't usually care for them, but in this case, I did care for them. Although it's fairly thin, I have really enjoyed 15, the Thargs Thriller. Second part of that, written by Tom Taylor. Written, you know, competently by Tom Taylor, but lovely art by John Davis Hunt. It's beautiful. Actually, it's probably written quite well, but the art is so beautiful. I like the monsters. Did he do the one about the werewolves?
Oh,
I think he might have done.
I don't know.
I get confused. But I quite like the structure because it's about a character who has 15 minutes to live, as far as we know. And because it's a 5-page story, I think each page has like 10 minutes.
It's done in the classic 24 countdown, isn't it?
Yeah. Ding, ding.
Although 24 didn't invent the countdown, it's now become synonymous.
No, Channel 4 invented countdown.
Correct.
Boo!
But, I mean, after, I think it was last week's Judge Dredd story that I kind of found a little bit lacklustre. But this week's has a script by Rob Williams. It's the first part of a story about a drug that calms people down because they're a bit stressed. Because the judges are really overstretched in the post-Day of Chaos situation, that they are, the tech judges are talking about a chemical suppressant to try and calm people down.
Mega City One's gone to shit, hasn't it?
It really has. This is the first, like, one of the, there was the story about the block that had seceded.
Yeah.
That was really, a really good post-Day of Chaos story, and this one feels like a proper post-Day of Chaos story.
I think what they've got going for them is, thank God, the Dark Judges are all still safely incarcerated, and they're, oh, whoops!
They aren't still incarcerated,
no,
James.
Oh, God. But
I don't know if I've seen Lawrence Campbell's art before, but it is beautiful.
It's lovely, isn't it?
I love it. It's like halfway between that really sort of expressive style that Jock, the expressionistic style that Jock uses, that a lot of people also do now, and something a lot more photorealistic, and it's absolutely lush. I love it. Really, really nice. It reminds me of a few different things, and I don't have the words. But it's also a story of violence and intrigue and political, like, people trying to, you know, ambition. Naked ambition is in there. There's no nudity in it, though.
My favourite sort of ambition.
So 2000 is good. Godzilla number 4 by Dwayne Swierczynski and Simon Gain. Continuing the story of the squad led by a Brit chap, who are charging the countries of the world billions to capture the monsters, the giant monsters that are ravaging the planet. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of... The action's really good in this, as it has been all along. Jane Swierczynski handles the big action sequences and the script quite nicely. Simon Gaines' art, again, it still like looks too cartoony. It doesn't look too cartoony. His style is quite cartoony and bold, and so it surprises you how well he captures the giant scale of like buildings collapsing and all of this like stuff going on. It's crazy ass. In this story, I'm not sure if the Godzilla comics are all supposed to have any sort of continuity to them. I suspect not, because in this one, they kind of introduce their version of Monster Island, which, if there's a continuity, you'd think would already be in the comics. So I don't know, but it's cool. And as James has got quite excited looking at it, it's still got the badges, the little badges on the cover that tell you which monsters are in here. This time it's Godzilla and Titanosaurus.
And is Godzuki in this one?
No, he's not on the cover. Interestingly, Rodan, the flying one, he's the one that we know as the flying one, is on the cover, but he's in the comic, but he's not in the badges on the front, and I'm not sure why.
Maybe that's just his big badge as the cover. Maybe he was like, I dominate those.
There is no point us putting a badge on the cover. They're going to know he's in it because he's on the cover.
Well, no, I think he demanded, I think. Yeah. He was like, if I'm going to be in this comic, I have to have the cover.
He's such a prima donna.
I know. It's that flying. It's the flying.
Oh, look at me. I can fly. I'm superior to you.
There's, on the back, in the back, there's a picture of the next cover, and it's got Mechagodzilla on, and it looks gorgeous.
Wow.
And also, there is an essay in the back of this that I noticed today, because for some reason I didn't read this one until today. There's an essay in the back by one Ryan Lindsay, who I assume is Ryan K. Lindsay. I haven't read it yet, though, because I'm allergic to Australians.
I don't know this man.
I'll be reading that later. It's about Godzilla.
I bet it all goes, la la, Sheila, 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 Barbies.
Call blimey, governor. No, that's English people, isn't it?
That wasn't English. That was...
You did it best. Do it again. What else would he have said?
You did it best.
Oh, look. Barbie, Barbie, Barbie. Racially dubious job adverts on Gumtree. La-di-da.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Indoor play centres.
Yeah, apparently the Australians invented the indoor play centre.
Why don't they like their children going outdoors? Mind you, I suppose if there are kangaroos everywhere, you're not going to want them outside. Because kangaroo will take your... kangaroos can break your arm with their wings. You need to watch out for them.
That's right. So don't get them angry, kids.
Journey into Mystery, number 642. Written by Kieran Gillen and Matt Fraction. With art by... I need to take that after berating James earlier on for taking his comics out midway through, comics out of the bag. I'm going to have to do it. It's a bit peculiar because there's a credit list at the beginning and it just says a whole bunch of people. Carmine de Giandomenico or something. It's the first part of a crossover between Journey into Mystery and the Mighty Thor, six parts, called Everything Burns. It's got a lovely cover, I believe, by Alan Davis and maybe Barry Kitson on the cover. Beautiful art throughout, really good writing throughout, but this is... it's not like a normal Journey into Mystery story because there's lots more bravado and Asgardian, the Asgardian mainstream, I tend to think of it. Lots of Thor in this issue. And... it kind of feels like it's about a civil war in Asgardia, fueled by Surtur, who it kind of ties into the recent stories in Journey into Mystery with the British otherworld, the sort of the spiritual version, fantasy version of Britain. I have to admit I got a little bit confused because there are ethnic and political things going on in Asgardia that I didn't for me, felt like they came out of nowhere, and it's possible that I haven't been deep reading Journey into Mystery enough, and that all that stuff's been there, or it might be stuff that's been coming up in The Mighty Thor. There seem to be a lot of tensions in Asgardi that have just come up, for me, have come up out of nowhere. The setup of where the technologies come from for this civil war is from Journey into Mystery, and I was at home with that stuff. I liked this first issue of this crossover. You know, I always kind of resent having to buy another book because a comic I like has crossed over into it. But I did quite like the first issue of this, and I do like Matt Fraction, so I'll probably buy The Mighty Thor for the duration of this. The slight confusion I felt at what exactly was going on was nowhere near as great as it was for the New Mutants crossover I read, and I genuinely do think it's just that I haven't been paying enough attention to the elements that came up in it. And it looks really nice. It's a gorgeous looking comic. I like it. But there is a level of I can relate to James's problems with Fantastic Four, because I know that we're kind of gearing up for Kieran Gillen leaving Journey into Mystery, and although the next arc sounds interesting, I kind of like him writing Kid Loki a lot.
You Loki people.
Mm-hmm. Madman number 5. This, it feels like this takes a little while to come out, but I don't think that's the case. I think that just it's written and drawn by Paul Grist, and I think the way he tells a story is quite loose. And so the information in each issue, although lots of stuff does happen, it's there's quite often not a lot of information per page. Actually, that feels wrong, because there is a lot going on in this comic. I don't know if it's that it takes a little while to come out, or if I'm just dumb and that's why I keep forgetting that it's coming out. It's a gorgeous looking comic. He is one of the best storytellers working in comics. It is about a British kid with superpowers, which is really interesting. It is about a British kid whose superpowers are mud-based, which is also kind of interesting, but also a little bit weird. Mm-hmm. And it's $3.50 book, but, you know, it is lovely. So I'm enjoying that. Well worth a read. But his writing and his art and his storytelling are bold enough that you can probably get a decent sense of it from looking through it on the comic shelf and working out if you want to get it. It's good. I like it. And Prophet number 28. For some reason, this issue is $3.99, and I'm hoping it's because it was an extra large one.
I had to take a double look when I saw that on the shelf, because the cover really reminds me of Luther Strode.
I suppose there's a similar cover, isn't there? There's actually a pose that's really similar. This issue was written by Brandon Graham, with co-story credits by Milano Giannis and Simon Roy, with art by Giannis Milano Giannis. Kind of wish the art was by Simon Roy. Simon Roy does do the cover. It's, as always, it's beautiful and full of ideas. Huge scale European feeling space opera stuff. I don't know if it's just because of some stuff that's been going on the comics internet in the last week that we're going to try and be the only people who don't really talk about it, or if it's because a character from the 90s this is one of the Rob Liefeld universe books. And I'm really enjoying Glory, and I'm really enjoying Prophet. But this has been as far distant from its origins as it could possibly be, which is why I've kind of been enjoying it. But we now do have a character called Die Hard, who I believe is a legacy character as well, who has, he's a big giant robot who has four arms? And he is pretty cool. Well,
he's got four arms.
And looks like he's going to kill everyone.
Mm.
Yeah, but he's got four arms and two legs.
He's got eight forearms.
He is pretty cool, but...
That was a really bad dad joke.
He is pretty cool. As a character in this, he's quite an interesting idea, but I struggle because Prophet is a name that's like relatively okay. I can live with that because they've built something really interesting out of it. Glory is another character name that's quite generic, and I've seen interesting things done with that character. But Die Hard speaks a bit too much to the mid-90s image thing. That I think I'm buying this because they are as far from that as possible. But it's still really interesting. The other thing about it that I'm actually really enjoying, but that it feels almost a shame, is we're now in a multi-part story, whereas originally it was just one-off issues exploring different Spartans around the different prophets, around the universe, around the galaxy. Whereas now we're in a continuing story, and it is good, and it's a really interesting continuing story, but it makes it a little bit more like, well, we're building to something.
Yeah.
Whereas I quite liked the idea of a format where literally it's a different story every month. It's just set in the same universe. I quite like that. I suppose there is only so far you can go with it, though. So
yeah.
I'm liking it, though. Liking it. I'm liking it. It's good. I hope it's $2.99 again next month, though.
Timothy Swan, he'll break your arm, with his bloody great wings.
That's right, it is I, the grand overlord of all podcasts, not my words. Congratulations on reaching 150 episodes. It's quite an amazing feat, I would say. So well done on that. I've got a few things to say that I've been planning to say for ages, but have been disorganised. First of all, The Dark Knight Rises. That was not my best Bane impersonation. For more, do listen to my show. We did some better ones related to the thing that me and Kihar came up with, Bane Football Manager. That was fun. So, yeah, I love The Dark Knight Rises. I believe it to be better structured than The Dark Knight, because The Dark Knight has a natural break in the middle where it feels like, oh, we should end. Whereas The Dark Knight Rises, oh, go, 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 go. I love Bane.
Bane, I expect you to die, Mr. Batman.
Even though he has a ridiculous Sean Connery voice, I'm kind of smug about figuring out who Talia was a bit of a way in. I mean, that's the interesting thing, I suppose, as comic fans, is that we have this pre-knowledge that of the universe that the stories can be drawn from. It has two capable women characters, something some people feared Christopher Nolan would never be able to do. Catwoman, I think, is really good. I can't wait for J.G. Leavitt to be in the Justice League as Batman. And seeing it again, more than once, I really enjoyed it. And although I believe in really strong editing in films, I feel it is worthy of its length. Anyhow, I'm way behind on podcasts because the Edinburgh Festival generates extra podcasts. Sadly, not there myself. So I don't know what you guys think of it. But I did waste a morning debating it with Nick, which was fun. So maybe I should post that transcript or at least tell you some of the key points. I do believe the betrayal was meaningful, as Miranda had forgiven Bruce for messing up her inheritance to the point that he withdrew from society when even what happened with Two-Face didn't push him away from the world. She helped save the board from Dagger, and she became part of the Resistance. So I felt that betrayal was meaningful. Also, I feel that Bane got as betrayed by Talia as Batman did, if not more. When he resolves to kill Batman before the bomb can go off, it's as if the attention she's paid to the Bat is something he really can't stand. He may well have gone out and stopped the bomb if possible after killing Batman. But as Nick pointed out, that's very subtextual, but that's how I watch movies. It's why I like The Matrix Revolutions, even though no one else does. Furthermore, many of the villains persist. The Joker's still alive, Scarecrow's still alive, possibly Talia, you know, didn't see her die. Possibly Bane, because he is a pretty tough guy. And there was a brilliant bit on the Overthinking It podcast, not to kind of cross podcast too much, but they envisaged the Joker alone in Arkham, giving his notes on what Bane should do next, loving the fake court but hating the bombing of Gotham, to an audience of none. Anyway, I really liked that. And in preparation for it, I had watched Batman Begins, and before that I'd read two Bat books, two Frank Miller Bat books, in fact. Firstly, Batman Year One. I finally read Year One. I often buy my brother graphic novels that eventually I myself read. I've recently done the rare reverse and given him The Wonderful Nelson. I really liked the straightforward grimness of Year One. I know that it's influenced a lot post that, but it still stands up really well. And I love how Jim Gordon works as the last incorruptible cop in a city of filth. And obviously filth and noir are the things that Miller thrives upon in either way you want to take that. And the way it is drawn upon in the Dark Knight trilogy is quite well done, even if the prostitution element of Catwoman and Holly, because I don't care what they called her in the film, could have been a bit more present. Gotham is a dark, dark place to be if you're poor. And Batman Begins, with that same ending of the Joker on the horizon, is a great opening to Batman. Which, for more of me opining on that, you can listen to the Origins episode of Tim and Max. The Dark Knight Strikes Again is the other Frank Miller Bat book I have already read, The Dark Knight Returns. Like all good Batman stories, this is a story about Superman. Captain Marvel, a character with whom I had zero attachment, practically made me well up when he died, which I thought was amazing, and I don't quite know how they did it. Green Arrow and the Question, or should I call him Paul Ryan, squabbling is good fun. The Talking Heads is a good conceit, carried over from the first book, and our world is full of stupid Talking Heads, and no doubt superheroes will be totally subject to them. Other than the Talking Heads, though, I do find the over-the-top art, which I know Frank Miller really pushes for superheroes, not especially pleasing. It's just a bit much. And the story is so epic that it would be great to see, to me, with a more restrained visual style. But the awesomeness of Batman forcing Superman back to the light is just brilliant. He is the gosh darned Batman, and he is going to beat Brainiac and Lex Luthor, and he is going to save Superman's soul, and he does it. So yeah, that's me. Happy 150th. If you want to hear my wittering because you've just picked up the Momcast, and I'm not on it as often as I used to be, then do look up Psycho Media, PSY COM. So it's PSY for psychology, COM for comedy, EDIA for EDIA, EDIA. And I'll speak to you soon, hopefully. Bye!
So what's been going on this week? Has anything been going on this week in comics that we can talk about without wanting to claw out our own eyes?
I mean, apart from Rob Liefeld and Scott Snyder, then?
Apart from people having arguments in public that just make our whole favourite medium look like idiots. Yes, apart from that.
David Wynne got a new brush pen.
Oh. Has he used it for any drawing?
He did a really awesome, I think it was Tank Girl, doing the finger, which looked really fucking awesome. A lot more sort of like hatching and stuff that I'm used to seeing in his art, and it looked really, really, really good.
I still want him to draw you on your
Steamroller.
I really want to see that. The James Steamroller. Oh, yeah.
There was an interview on Comics Bulletin with... It's round two with Brian Wood. There was an interview about 8 months ago, just before Conan came out, with Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan, which was really good. But they went... the interviewer, Zach Davison, caught up with Brian Wood again to talk about Conan. Now it's running... Now we're a couple months in. The reason this particular interview has taken my eye and a couple of other people's eye has been sort of focus is because Brian Wood pushes back a bit. He gets... if you go to the website and read and make up your own mind about it, it's a good interview. It's really great hearing Brian Wood talk about what he's working on and different kind of... trying to figure out a bit more about the mythology about how people write comics. There are a lot of technical things I guess a writer wouldn't know to do with the artwork. It's unusual unless they actually do some of the artwork, so there's some odd questions in there. But I think there's a very heavy focus about continuity
coming from the interviewer,
and Brian Wood gets a bit exasperated about being asked a very similar question in different phrasing. I'm not sure if Zach got given or asked for questions for him, and it wasn't perhaps examined close enough to see whether or not the questions were actually really asking the same thing. But
I don't think there's any real, but there's probably no, not scrutiny, what's the word, quality assurance thing going on with most comic journalism. So he probably just asked the questions that he wanted to.
Yeah, perhaps.
An awful lot goes into art. Oh, yeah, sorry. No,
I think I've read a bit of it. I haven't read all of it, and I'm going to read it after the show.
It's a long interview, and I did spring it on these guys beforehand. It just it was interesting because Brian Wood actually I follow him, and he tweeted it about, you know, oh, I pushed back a bit, but he said on the whole he said it was a good interview. But you can see in the interview he gets the point, like you're basically asking, what is the thing about continuity? Why are you constantly asking about continuity? And I think there was a couple of people tweeting about how people there are certain fans who get very engrossed in continuity and want to know, you know, if you're basing it on this particular story, why isn't this character in it? Why isn't that character in it? Why aren't they here? But why is his mum in it, or, you know, anything else? And I think the thing that Brian was running across is, hey, look, it's loosely based. I've taken a concept from this story, so I've taken this part, but I'm making it my own. That's the whole point, you know. You're creating a new story. Why do you want to hear the same things revisited, you know?
I mean, he talks a bit about how actually he's not just, the creators on it aren't completely freeballing it. They've got Dark Horse and I guess Paradox are the people who own the Robert E. Howard license. But I mean, what's interesting about it is that it's actually not that it's not that unusual in comic journalism for... It's a problem in all sorts of journalism. Journalism isn't objective, and it's supposed to be a lot of the time, but in most areas, journalism isn't particularly objective. But in comic journalism in particular, the journalist is always seems to be preoccupied with their own shit.
Yeah.
And the questions that the guy interviewing is asking Brian Wood in that interview all seem to be very directed to his personal...
The interviewer's
personal issues with the work.
And he has his own theories that Brian Wood's like, don't read into it so much. At the end of the day, it's just a story, you know.
Good to see someone actually sort of...
And that's what I liked. I liked that... there's nothing wrong with being, it can get a bit irritating, but there's nothing wrong with being really heavily into continuity with certain characters, but it's just, don't, you know, maybe ask the question. But there are so many other things, not just about the books, that you can talk to the creators about, and I don't know, there are some questions that I wasn't really sure why I was asking Brian Wood about them.
He obviously thought he was being insightful, but the thing it always reminds me of, is there was an interview with David Lindelof. There's a video interview of David Lindelof, who did Lost, and whatever people think of Lost, this guy interviewing, it gets 5 minutes into it, and he's giving he's giving him a really hard time about Lost, but it becomes about the ending of it in the last season, and it becomes really apparent really, really quickly that the guy didn't really get any, like, a really basic level. He just completely not understood the last half of the show, and that's fine. If you know, you shouldn't be, you know, shows shouldn't be so obtuse that the average viewer can't get it. But if you're going to be in an interview and you're going to be trying to give, if you're going to be pretentious and trying to give someone a hard time about something they've done, you kind of, if you're pretentious but you haven't really understood what's going on, then you just end up looking stupid.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what...
Yeah, do your research. Yeah. I think make sure you've... there's nothing wrong with sounding out with a couple of people just to make sure you're on the right tracks. Mm.
It's quite nice as well, because... I guess all journalism, a lot of, like, movie, when you see people being interviewed... When you see those interviews that film stars do, where you know that they've had 10 minutes with each news, so they're just sat against the same backdrop and they're answering, and people keep going in and asking the same questions, and they have to be polite in response. It's always kind of quite nice. And the same thing happens in comics, where most of the interviews you hear or see are specifically there to hype a book that's coming out.
Mm.
So nobody asks particularly difficult questions, but then the creators don't really give particularly challenging answers either. Do you know what and that's like, it gets a bit boring for everyone concerned. So that's quite interesting.
This continuity thing, does that centre around Conan mostly?
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah, I get the feeling...
There is a bit about Star Wars, but is mainly Conan, because the interviewer is big Conan fan and has got back into Conan recently.
I'd say lucky that he's moved on to less contentious properties with Dark Horse, like Star Wars.
Though. Yeah, nobody cares about Star Wars.
No. Continuity, schmontinuity.
Well, I mean, George Lucas doesn't care about Star Wars.
Re-zing! Yeah, really told him. He'll probably cry if he listens to this.
I don't think I'm getting invited back to the ranch.
No, probably not.
Yeah, so that's worth checking out, having a read. There's a part one with Becky Cloonan and Brian Wood, and that's a really good read as well, so you should check that out. But this one was particularly of note because of the giving as good as you... Well, questioning the question, which you don't quite often see. Yeah,
put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
In there. I prefer getting as good as I give.
I was going to say, but he wasn't... No, I think questioning the question was better. He was... getting the interviewer to think about what he was asking.
He was the just, interviewer won't have changed, though.
I hate when people like challenge me to think.
Well, it doesn't happen very often, does it?
Talking about really challenging to think about...
that was a really slick segue into whatever you're going to talk about now. Yes. She's good, isn't she?
On a lighter note, we've all heard of the book 50 Shades of Grey, and it seems that numerical... shaded erotica is in now. So Andy Ewington, who is of 45, Blue Spear and Overrun fame, has brought out his own version of numerically shaded erotica called 50 Shades of Ray. It's a very funny little spoof that he's done. I don't usually mention things like this, but it really did make me
it did tickle me, but not in a sexual way.
No, and one of the things I really liked is Andy just put a little bit at the beginning which said, okay, I admit it, I was bored when I wrote the spoof. Anyway, take it as it was intended. And I think that...
That's what she said.
Yeah, and then he puts you her. But yeah, it was...
Great minds, see.
And the thing is, this is really well written. And it's funny. And it's, if you're that way inclined, it's erotic.
What's she suggesting by saying that this is well written, that 50 Shades of Grey is not...
I haven't read it. It's very, very similar to the songs I was talking about earlier on, in that I have only really heard people talking about it.
I think I'd enjoy it just fine if I read it.
No, I like actual erotica.
I like all sorts. I quite like bad erotica.
So, it's all right to like porn, it's now all right to like Ray.
Excellent.
And that's on Andy's blog, which is the45comic.com. Logs.
Post it in the show notes. It'll be in the show notes.
Can I say something sincere?
If you wanna.
Shall I have a go?
You don't normally, but you can.
We didn't really mark 150th show, but several of you that listened said some really nice things to us. So I think just from us three, thank you for that. That was really nice of you. Nice to read last week. You're lovely people.
Yes, thank you. I put Timothy Swan.
You break your arm.
Sent us the wrong contribution. He sent us an old contribution. So what I really meant to do was make it sound like I'd posted that one. I'd put that one in the show as an homage, but actually it was just a cock-up. Right. So we'll get his real contribution from last week in this week's, which is good. You'll have heard that by now, probably, listener.
Yes.
So thank you for being so kind to us. Yes.
And thank you all for listening this far.
Can you remember any of the specific things people said, James?
No, I can't quite. Several of our friends said several nice things. It was just a brief aside. I didn't realise you were going to call me out and make me quote people verbatim. Otherwise, I'd have done a bit more research. I just remembered that several of them had said really nice things. And now this is worse than one of our obits.
No, it's fine. It's okay. I'm sure people understand the nurture.
We'll be much more slick doing this by the time we get to our 1,500th podcast.
Yes, how old will we be?
I'm going to say, do you think that's even possible for us to get that far in?
I'm going
to
do the sums.
Oh. I've been sat in a really uncomfortable chair all day today, and my coccyx hurts.
You are uncomfortable.
My coccyx, and given my bad back I had last week, I don't really want it to.
28 years. But yeah, we've done three already.
So we'll be, you and I'll be well in our 60s, but.
28 years.
I reckon, 28.8, that's nearer to
29. Let's round it up.
Yeah.
But we're, you and I'll be in our 60s then when that happens, so hopefully we'll be a bit more mature.
No, I don't see that happening.
Let's hope not.
I'm planning on getting old, growing old disgracefully.
Me too. I should wear purple.
Don't you already wear purple sometimes? You've got those, that negligee.
That's true.
He's got a negligee that's purple. That's the image I was just painting then. We still need to take our video or photos and send it to Mr. Georgiou.
No, we don't, because Mr. Georgiou is looking at video that exists of us and using the video as reference.
Is he doing that? When did that happen?
But if you get your finger out, listener, you can still be part of the next Elemental Micah by following the link that Nick has put on the show notes.
Yes. He will draw you into his comic.
Yeah.
If you're quick, but we've been really slow, so.
Yeah. But he's all over our videos. So
which
I can't
videos?
Wait. Like the when we went to Leeds when I came and the live one.
Yeah, the live the trailer for live one, because he was pointing out my expression, I think towards James, and I think that I said to him that he should make that my picture.
He'll have long hair, Nick. Won't he?
So take another picture. Send it to him.
Take another picture then if you want to show him short head Nick.
I don't know if I like short head Nick.
I like long head Nick. I like short head Nick. I'd like no hair Nick if Nick had no hair. I want to be in this picture.
Am I being videoed or pictured?
Why am I not in this picture?
I have a perfect picture of Nick for you, Mike. I'll email that to you.
Excellent.
What about me? I want one now.
Right, do you want one now, James?
Well,
this is making for great listening.
So James is an only child listener, if that wasn't obvious from his appalling behaviour throughout.
Yes.
I was an only child for a couple of years, but it hasn't really stuck.
It wore off.
Yeah. I'm not sure what that's about. Do you want to do your spotlight, James?
Yes, please.
What is it you're spotlighting?
Tonight I'm going to spotlight a book called Asterix and the Big Fight. It's written by René Goscinny. And illustrated by, how are we pronouncing this week?
Albert Uderzo. Isn't that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, let's call him Albert Uderzo.
Uderzo.
Shall I do the science bit?
Yeah.
Okay, bear me a second. Because I went in the office today, so I haven't printed it out. So I just
You mean the
it.
Wikipedia page?
Asterix and the Big Fight is a French... It's the seventh, of course, of the Asterix series. The French edition was released in 1966... translated into English in 1971, and it of course appeared in serial form in Pilote magazine issues 261 to 302 in 1964.
Just to clarify with the listener, when James says serial, he means cereal as in
edible
sequence.
You could eat it.
Oh, right, actually you mean like cereal as in breakfast cereal.
And what happened, what they were doing, the French were experimenting with psychoactive drugs at that time.
Ah.
And what happened is you'd eat the cereal. And the cereal had very special, as I say, psychoactive drugs that would actually, they were specially nuanced. So your head then had the story implanted into it each week. So each cereal was slightly different, a different scene or a different part of the story.
They were way ahead of their time. Because we're only just starting to have that happen in American comics, aren't we?
Yeah. We are, with Marvel Serial AR.
Mm.
So you eat a box of cereal, look at a Marvel book, and you see Axel Alonso telling you about stuff.
Yeah.
What kind of cereal?
It will be just plain sort of flakes.
Flakes?
Yeah.
Plain cornflake type cereals.
I don't like things that float in milk.
Sorry, Riz Crispé.
Well, that's cereal. Only cereal. What do you mean that float in milk?
I'm not keen on cereal.
Cereal
with milk.
Hadn't diversified at that. Well, you know, most people are, Jane, so, you know, just let us roll with it.
I know, it confuses me.
Mm.
Why does it confuse you?
Like, it's drinking, but it's chewing, and that early in the morning, I can't.
Do you have gravy on your roast dinner?
I'm awake enough to eat a roast dinner. First thing in the morning.
We've seen you first thing in the morning.
Like cereal with... Isn't that the
it
only way people eat cereal?
Much. No, I just eat it raw.
Don't provoke her about early morning matters, because I'm really worried that early morning Jane is suddenly kicking. And I still do a little bit of piss when I think about early morning Jane, when I got to meet her that time.
I was not that bad.
Oh fuck, yes you were. The most terrifying human being I've ever met in my life.
I had little bits of silicone stuck to my eyeballs, so that might have not helped matters.
No, I'm sure that would have made even a normal person a little bit grumpy.
Wow, I wasn't there, but this is really giving me an insight into the whole thing. Can you now talk about the book, please, James?
At this point, we've gotten to that, and you'll notice as we move through the series now, we've got to the point where we have an Asterix book set where they go on travels, so a travelling Asterix book, and then Asterix book set in the village. Last time it was Asterix and Cleopatra. This time Asterix and the Big Fight is set in and around the environs of the Gaulish village that we know and love so well. A plot is being hatched.
A plot.
In a fortified camp of Totorum by Nebulous Nimbus and his left-hand man, Felonius Corcus. Felonius Corcus has heard of a Gaulish tradition whereby chiefs who have a disagreement settle the disagreement by having what they call the Big Fight. And that's basically two Gaulish chiefs get together, have a wumble, and whoever wins the fight wins the chiefdomship of their rival's village.
Really?
And they decided that, well, a good way of taking over vital statistics is, for he is the chief of Asterix's village, a good way of taking over his village would be to get a Roman-friendly chief to challenge him to a fight. So they go off and they visit the chief. Oh, God almighty, what's his name?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know just the man. He's a Cassius Ceramics. He's the shit.
And he's right. Roman friendly.
There's a bust with his name on it right in front of me in this massive panel.
He's from a village.
He's Linoleum. Sorry, Jane, what were you saying?
I can't remember now.
Good. And he's really bought into the whole Roman thing. All but a few of his villagers are shaved with short hair. And he calls himself a Gallo-Roman as well. There's lots of sort of pseudo-Roman architecture throughout the village. And he is a big brute of a man. Nick is looking at a picture of him here. He's a big brute, isn't he? I mean, you'd be quite concerned if he were to challenge you to a fight, wouldn't you?
Yes. Who is it who keeps shouting?
That's the shtick of Nebulous Nimbus. He is a shouty general.
He is.
Yes, and all of his dialogue is written in big, bold, shouty letters. So they get Cassius Ceramics on side, but quite rightly he says, well, look, they've got a druid who makes a magic potion. If I take on vital statistics, it's going to be a right carve-up, mate. So,
why does he talk like Raymond
Stone? I'm paraphrasing.
Mm.
So, the Romans realise that obviously they need to take out vital statistics. So they send a group of camouflaged Romans out to try and... Because obviously Getafix goes out quite a lot gathering herbs and so forth for his potions. They're going to try and take him out while he's doing that. So they head off in deep camouflage. And we have, as all the Romans head off to try and capture Getafix, we have a fantastic panel that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. One panel with 7 tree or forest based puns.
Oh my goodness.
One panel, 7 puns. Bang! You get value for your money in an Asterix book.
Is that your quota of tree or shrub based puns for the year?
There's more than just 7 in the whole book.
Oh wow.
I have overloaded.
If you've overloaded, does that mean you can't have any other kind of pun for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm going to read more Asterix books, so really I've got no.
Oh no!
I noticed on the Wikipedia page as well there is a whole section devoted to the puns that appear in this book, which is marvellous.
I'm developing a cereal that makes you immune to puns, so you can be my test subject.
Yeah, I ain't eating any chocolate. I ain't anything to do with you that's got anything
chocolate
to do with the early mortal. Yeah, I might eat it. Asterix and Obelix, though, Getafix is out and he's just about to approach this spinny that they form themselves into.
Spinny?
Spinny, yeah, it's like a group of trees.
Oh.
Doesn't Getafix drink the potion as well, though?
No.
Oh, why not?
Well, you know, you don't get high on your own supply, do you?
That's a very good point.
Yeah. Asterix and Obelix have rescued him. At the point that Getafix realises that it's a Roman ambush, luckily, Obelix has got a menhir with him and throws it to deter the Romans.
He throws it?
Unfortunately, he splats Getafix beneath it.
Oh, my gosh!
Look, here is... Getafix is betwixt menhir and ground.
But how... But Getfix is dead.
And so the Romans think, giving much succour to their Gaulish champion.
But are they the suckers?
They're the suckers. He's a sucker to have succour. Because Getafix is not dead.
How many suckers?
However, how many suckers on the dance floor? However, Getafix is loopy. He's completely lost his memory and he's turned into somewhat of an idiot.
Not an idiot.
Oh, no.
So he lives, but he's an idiot, which is obviously causes a great deal of concern for the chief.
Consternation.
Consternation for the chief after his rival turns up and challenges him to a duel. However, his rival notices that Getafix is still alive, removing his sucker. His sucker has now gone. It's now he's left with hubris. And so he travels out with his hubris.
Did we overdose on suckers?
We did overdose on suckers. And the Romans decide that they need to go and spy on what's happening with Getafix. Asterix and Obelix try various ways to try and get Getafix to remember how to make the magic potion with increasingly disastrous effects.
I like that they're not concerned that he's maybe got brain damage. And they don't, like, feel that they need to look after him.
No, they just want their drugs.
Yeah.
So the Roman goes to spy on Getafix dressed as a tree. Now, an exploding cauldron has previously fallen on his head, which makes him smell of fish, which attracts an owl. So he's dressed as a tree. This is his disguise. The owl is attracted to him. The owl becomes a really funny runner.
For the
rest of the story, the whole way, becomes obsessed with this Roman spy.
Did the exploding cauldron happen in this book?
Yes.
Hang on.
How come you didn't mention it?
I skipped over it because I knew that I would then come back to mention it briefly when describing the spy heading off dressed as a tree with the besotted owl.
So, hang on. The owl is in love with the Roman spy that's dressed as a tree.
At first he thinks he's in love with a walking and talking tree, but then he realises it's the Roman. He continues his obsession.
Wow.
That's quite a modern day viewpoint on...
I think human beings have been having sexual intercourse with animals for millennia.
But the animal fancies him.
You don't tend to think that the owl might want it to happen. No.
Oh, it's a twist, yeah. It is a twist. Yeah. Asterix and Obelix capture him, inevitably, and he becomes the guinea pig for Getafix's various noxious potions, which turn him all manner of amusing colours. Eventually, Getafix makes a potion that turns him back to his lovely pink colour, but causes him to float, and he floats away from the village to give his good news to his Roman leaders. The good news being, of course, Getafix's brain is fucked up.
How does he get down?
Well, they tie him up like a big helium balloon, and the potion wears off in the middle of the night.
Oh, so he doesn't just keep floating.
Asterix and Obelix obviously know that they need to do something, and Vital Statistics sends him off to visit a druid that he's aware of that deals with issues like this, called Psychoanalytics.
Like a
druid.
That's clever.
In his waiting glade at his consulting hut, we get to meet various characters. A barbarian who's a little bit timid, which is a drawback in his line, as his receptionist said. Mm. A man who's afraid the sky may fall on his head. One who thinks he's a boar. And one character that we see in the final panel of that page that no one knows who he thinks he is. But, of course, we know, as sophisticated 21st century readers, the guy is dressed up in Napoleon several hundred years before.
That's quite funny. He looks a bit like Asterix as well, though, which is confusing.
But he's a Gaul. So, 1,600 years before Napoleon will exist. But I think that's lovely. That's very funny. It's obviously the cliche that people go mad and think they're Napoleon.
Did you say 1,600?
It's got to be around that, isn't it? Because this happens around the time of Julius Caesar, which was around about the late BCs, early ADs.
Oh.
Napoleon, that was the 1700s, 1800s? 1800s. So 1,800 years, maybe. I'm glad you maybe clarify that. It's important. they go and talk to Psychoanalytics and they convince him to come back to the village and help cure Getafix. Gets Cauldron out, tries to help Getafix. Unfortunately, Asterix decides to show Psychoanalytics how the accident happened by giving him a little tap on the head with a menu.
Why?
So
Asterix decides to do that.
No, Obelix.
Oh, Obelix. Much
to Asterix's irritation.
Hmm.
So now we have not one but two completely mad druids. In the meantime, the big fight is going to happen. Asterix tries to train Vital Statistics to get him fight fit. So we get a nice little Rocky sequence where Asterix, before Rocky as well, which is clever.
Hmm.
Maybe Rocky nicked the idea of...
From this?
Yeah.
Is Asterix...
Of boxing. From
Asterix a really good fighter then? It's not just... He's not just relying on his magic potion.
He's the most tenacious of... And, yeah, he's the best fighter, really. I mean, Obelix is the best fighter, but Asterix is the most intelligent ghoul in the village, isn't he? So who else... You know, you'd want the most clever person trying to train you up to...
It's difficult, though. Is Obelix just the best fighter because he fell in a vat of magic potion when he was younger?
Well, yeah.
It's all about brute force and drug addiction.
Yeah, well, he's chemistry. Not addicted to drugs, is he? He's just he's the world's first metahuman.
He's like a crack baby.
He's had his body's physiology and biology changed permanently.
Yes.
Yeah. He's no different to any of the superheroes we like to watch apart from Batman. He's just a man.
With a man's courage.
Yeah.
Nothing but a man, but he will never fail.
Isn't that Flash?
Maybe.
Oh.
I think it also applies to Batman, though.
It is.
But without the dark origins.
But no one ever asked Batman to dive!
No, that's true.
No.
Dive!
So the day of the big fight approaches, and it leads to one of my favourite pages in all of the Asterix books, and one that used to absolutely beguile me when I was a kid. It's the setting up of the fun fair that will appear around the fight, and it looks like a modern or late 60s fun fair, but obviously very low tech, so it's all in all wooden and not mechanical. It looks lovely. It's a really beautiful set of panels, and a really nice example of scene setting. So really good storytelling, allowing a few predominantly wordless panels to set the scene for you and tell the story. And also, I think these sort of panels at this point in Asterix's history shows the confidence of the storytellers that were making the books. The early books have this really frenetic pacing to them, where it's like they never want to take their foot off the pedal because they're worried they're going to lose the reader, maybe. Where at this point, there's the confidence in the story they're telling, confidence in the world that they've created, that you can take a step back and you can let things evolve slightly more slowly. The pun rate, the joke rate is still really high, but you get this richer storytelling at this point, which is lovely. You know, it makes it a much easier read as an adult. It means that these books of this era, of the period that we're in now, which I kind of feel of the real classic Asterix books, are just a much more satisfying read.
Mm-hmm.
Because that confidence comes across. So both sides set out for the big fight while Obelix sulks in his quarry, because obviously he's not only severely injured one druid, he's severely injured two.
Mm-hmm.
And Vital Statistics and Cassius Ceramics square off in the ring. Vital Statistics, so just before he dispatches Asterix back to the village to get Obelix, because Vital Statistics knows whatever happens, there's every chance it's all going to kick off after the fight anyway. Obelix has a great idea in the meantime, though, but at the same time he has a great idea, Getafix somehow manages to create a potion that completely cures him. Unfortunately, this is at the same point that Obelix is administering his great idea, which is, he probably quite rightly thinks, well, if a tap on the head sent him mad...
Oh, no!
Maybe another tap on the head would send him sane again. So just as Asterix is celebrating that Getafix is cured, Aminia flies over his shoulder and crushes Getafix. As luck would have it, this time it doesn't have the same effect. And Getafix is cognizant enough to be able to brew up a batch of magic potion for them to rush off to the big fight. Asterix arrives, and after an hour of running around, Vital Statistics summons up the courage to face his enemy and knocks his teeth out.
Mm.
So without the magic potion, Vital Statistics still manages to defeat Cassius Ceramix.
Excellent. I mean, it is a bit sad to see him as such a coward, isn't it?
It is, but actually, it was kind of, it's a little bit like the Rumble in the Jungle, though. Essentially, his running around was a bit like Ali doing the rope-a-dope, where, you know, he sort of leant against the ropes, let Foreman unload onto his stomach. Ali took the punishment, and then when Foreman was too tired to fight back, Ali took him down. Ali, boom, bye, Ali, boom, bye. It's very much like this. Vital Statistics, boom, bye. They all shout.
I'm kind of wondering if Amy wants to watch Warrior tonight now. You've made me, you've got my blood up. I want to see a film about fighting.
I'm going to go home and watch When We Were Kings.
Is that about
fighting?
It's
my favourite documentary. It's the Rumble in the Jungle. Oh, it's the one about the Rumble, yeah. The Romans, of course, sneaky bastards. And thinking that the Gauls don't have their magic potion, attack and try and take the village by force. Of course, as we all know, they had their magic potion, and things end in a rather traditional way.
With a fist up.
With a fist up.
Hang on, sound awful?
Cassius Ceramix, of course, is now just as loopy as Get a Fix after having a menhir land on him. And Vital Statistics says, you lot go off, you rule yourself, I know it's my village, but you go and do your own thing. And they're allowed to become proper Gauls again and live in their Gaulish way. And everyone in Vital Statistics Village gets to have a great big nosh up.
Yay! A boar by Tutatis!
Absolutely. It's, as I probably will be saying for the next few months, it's a brilliant book. It is. It's part of the what is a golden period for the Asterix books, in my opinion. Sort of Cleopatra onwards, they were pretty much faultless, in my opinion, as stories. Like I say, it's just a lovely, rich, joyous, proper all-ages read that holds up even now. Even where there's some sort of period-specific humour, pretty much everything holds up beautifully. I love these books.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That was lovely, James.
Thank you.
You're beautiful, man.
It's true.
What are you guys up to this week?
I am going to an activity farm on Saturday, and I am going to give my dead grandmother some flowers for her birthday on Sunday.
All right, she's not at an activity farm.
No, we're taking a visit to her grave to put some flowers on it on Sunday, because Scarlett hasn't been yet, and my mum thought it was a good idea. It's not as creepy and weird as it sounds, but I'm making it sound really horrible.
That Spider-Man comic was literally the worst thing you could have read this week, then.
We're going to go and pay my respects to my grandmother, whose birthday it would have been on Sunday.
Mm.
How about that? That's less creepy.
Yes. Jane, what are you going to be doing?
It's my mother's birthday next week, so I'm going to see my mother this weekend.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Jane.
Yay, happy birthday, Mrs. Jane. I don't know what I'm doing. I think we don't have anything planned this weekend, which is quite good.
Oh, damn it, the weekend, I actually have something else going on. You don't have anything planned.
I might be seeing Steve, though, this weekend, or is he going to be busy?
Oh, yeah. I might not have told him about adjusted plans, but that's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, I think it's going to be quite nice, because it was nice to not have plans. Although, if I'm feeling the way I'm feeling now, it's probably a big part of this weekend is probably going to be spent pooping.
We have a toilet, so you'll be fine around ours. We have lots of toilet paper too.
That's good.
We're probably all going to poop this weekend, though,
yeah.
I imagine.
Yeah, I just hope that nobody else has to spend as much time as I do doing it. Mm. And then I don't know what else is happening. It's good. The first week, it's one of the only weekends this summer where there isn't craziness going on. Do a bit of gardening. Like a bit of gardening.
Mm, it's nice.
So you can get the blight off your tomatoes in your garden.
I think you're stuck with tomatoes in your lady garden. I mean, blight in your lady garden.
Yeah.
Not you, Jane. I think I'm stuck with blight in my lady garden. My lady garden is blighted. Listener.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Definitely tell us what you think of the show. You can leave comments on iTunes or you can email us. Should we do the address again?
Momcast@gmail.com.
We always like contributions. They are awesome.
Yep.
Keep an eye on the website for... there should be some film reviews going up belatedly because I've been rubbish. And maybe a guest review or two. It's all good. Should we say goodbye?
Yes, let's.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Disco I go in, my heart is pumping for love, pumping for love. Because when I'm thinking of you and all the things we can do, my heart's pumping for love.
What is she singing? Why is she singing sex songs?
It's just a crap dance song that I was played a lot and I knew the words because it was played a lot.
Wait a minute, Ben Parker's dead.
Spoilers. Exaggerated dialogue.
Exaggerated dialogue. Ah, lula, lula, la, la, la. Voice exercises.
I thought that you were being a Martian from Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds.
Is that how they talk in that?
Ola! Ola!
Do you think they came from a different part of Mars? From the Martians? Because I say Martians. In Mars Attacks.
Welcome to the 150... No, no, I've done it wrong, haven't I? In the 150... No, hang on.
Are there boobies in Aquila this week?
Are they going to be modelled on Lee Gallagher's boobies?
Do you like Lee Gallagher's boobies, Shane?
Yeah.
They're your favourite boobies?
Yeah.
Do you wish your boobies were Lee Gallagher's boobies?
No.
There you go, these are outtakes.